Hello.
And welcome
to Ghoul Society.
That's my little sister, Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society. Oh! That's the wrong one!
Oops, my bad.
We love our little soundboard.
Yeah, it's a little. It's just four sounds.
Well, you can change them. Yeah, but I like the ones that we have.
Yeah.
I'll play them all.
Nice.
Those are the sounds that we like to have on hand, just in case, even though we literally never use them.
They were in last episode.
Oh, true.
They've been in a couple.
True.
Good just point. Not all the time. But good they point. Have been in a couple.
Well, me and Sarah have been already talking for the last hour and a half.
Oop, catching each other up. Just two sisters gabbing about things that are not on here.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
What can we gab about on here? My race is next week.
Woohoo!
What? By the time this is out, I'll have already done it. So I probably did great.
You did so amazing. And I will be camping while you're running around.
Yeah.
Which I'm super excited about, but also kind of scared. Ooh, I'm scared of the dark. I'm just going to bring my earplugs and I'm just going to put them in. And whatever happens, happens. Like, if someone screams, I'll hear it. But I won't. You know when it's so quiet in the night in the woods?
You get scared.
And you're just listening for something?
Yeah.
I find that if I just put my earplugs in, then I don't have that. Mm. And so then I'm just like, oh, well, whatever.
Time to go to sleep.
Time to go to sleep.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Hopefully it's not rainy, because then I don't think we will go, because it sucks just being wet the entire time that you're camping, you know? Like, that's not really fun.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, keep me posted on your race.
Yeah.
And I feel like, let's just get right into this because it's kind of a longer episode. Sorry, I got spooked by the water sound for a sec.
Okay. I didn't know it was long.
It's a little long.
I thought it was going to be a short guy since you did it all this morning.
No.
Spoiler alert, Jamie is just powered through and did her research, and I'm like, la da da, mine's not ready.
I powered through. It was really hard. I tried to do it yesterday. We were going to record this morning, but like, I just could not bring myself to do it yesterday, but then I did today, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Also, me and Sarah both have needos in our hands. That's NEEDOH. They're those really squishy fidgets.
Love.
And they're so nice.
This
I have
a
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. Because one came in a pack of three, the little kitties.
Oh, yeah. The kitties are cute.
And they're so good. I have, like, the ball that has a different color on the inside. I have the marshmallowy one, which is so, like, cute and squishy. And then I have the cube. And then I have the mini kitties.
Yeah.
And they're so cheap. They're lovely. Anyway, have anything else to say before we deep dive into this crazy one?
No, just that anyone who's reading the Throne of Glass series or has read it, I'm about to start Kingdom of Ash. And I'm preparing myself, but anyway, I know that some of you out there will be thinking of me. Because it's fucking crazy.
Oh my god. Yeah.
It's so good.
Damn.
It made me cry the other day when I was finishing my tandem read, because I read two books at the same time.
Right. That's so,
I was crying and I was like screaming in Montana. I kept being like, can you like pipe down a bit? Because he was reading. We were reading together. And he was like, I'm trying to read my book. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just too excited and I have no one else to talk to this about.
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
It's an amazing series.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
And to be fair, the smut doesn't even arrive until, like, the fifth book.
Oh.
And it only happens a couple times. Hmm. Like, if you, like, compared to, like, ACOTAR, where they're smut all the time every, like, 10 pages, almost, sometimes, oh in some of the books.
10-page smut.
Yeah. Yeah, Throne of Glass is less so, but it is a little intense. Anyway, yeah. Super good. Love my fairy books.
Yeah.
Love my romance books.
Love that. Love that.
And everybody go read a book.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. Okay.
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Okay.
In 1879, a mystical healing town was built in an area known as Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Not to be confused with Arkansas, which is what? The wrong way to say Arkansas.
What?
Because it's spelled Arkansas, but it's apparently pronounced Arkansas.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's all.
Did you not know that?
I knew it, but when I typed it out, I was like...
Arkansas!
I'm going to say this wrong.
Oh.
So originally, of course, indigenous Native Americans discovered this area of lush forests and rugged cliffs, and most importantly, natural springs, which were known to contain healing properties.
Mm-hmm.
These are the ancestral lands of the Osage Nation, who call themselves Wazaze, which stands for the upstream people, and the bands of Delaware and the Shawnee peoples. Through time, various groups and tribes lived in this area, including the Illinois, the Ponca, the Quapaw, the Omaha, the Caddo tribe, and Ka. As most colonial stories go, the original peoples were removed from their lands through the Indian Removal Act of 1830, which made it so that the original caretakers who occupied the land for time immemorial could not hold title to their own lands, so they weren't allowed to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
Many were forcibly moved to Arkansas Territory, which became the temporary holding ground for thousands who were displaced, and over time, various tribes, such as the Mississippi Choctaw, Creek, Chickasaw, and Cherokee tribes, were removed again and pushed into, quote, Indian Territory, end quote, which is modern-day Oklahoma.
Oh.
And they were pushed into this area along the Trail of Tears. At that time, many passed near modern-day Eureka Springs, and by the time that they reached their destination, thousands of Cherokee and other indigenous peoples perished.
Mm.
So, this land already has a really dark history.
Dark History by Bailey Sarian.
Oh, so good. I really need to catch up on my Bailey Sarian dark histories. Once white settlers flocked to the area and pushed out indigenous peoples, they created a small community town which drew more and more people in. By 1880, 2,000 homes had appeared, and over 15,000 people lived in Eureka Springs.
Whoa!
And that's like the size of Salmon Arm. Well, Salmon Arm's like 1819-ish.
Yeah, but still, that's crazy in that time frame.
Yeah, I know. Governor Powell Clayton recognized the potential of Eureka Springs and wanted even more people to come to the area. He saw this, like, as a really big opportunity, essentially. Mm-hmm. In collaboration with the Eureka Springs Improvement Company, they orchestrated the arrival of the Frisco Railroad to the area, allowing easier access for visitors and resources. Thus, a grand hotel was to be built as a healing retreat, and between 1884 and 1886, the Crescent Hotel was created.
Hotel? Haunted Hotels Part 2!
This hotel was operated for 15 years by the Eureka Springs Improvement Company, ESIC, and was an exclusive hotspot for the wealthy elite. Eventually, due to slow business, in the winter months, in 1902, the hotel was leased to the railroad, and Crescent College for Women opened and operated until 1934. This college was super positive and provided young women with educational opportunities, empowering them to pursue knowledge and personal growth. The closing of the college was the end of an era, but its legacy continues on. Another interesting note, the women at the college actually asked to bring in a Ouija board because one of them felt like it had strange energy to it already.
Whoa.
And this was before when, in 1937, Norman Baker acquired the Crescent Hotel to embark on an ambitious venture. He wanted to transform the hotel into the Baker Cancer Clinic and presented himself as a visionary healer claiming to possess the knowledge on how to cure cancer. Okay. This is where our story truly begins.
Oh.
Do you know this? You probably know it, but you probably just don't recognize it. You've definitely seen it.
I have a theory of what he does.
Okay, I'm excited for your theory. Well, do you want to share it?
Does he just, like, pretend to know how to cure cancer and then fake curing people's cancers and then they die? Nailed it.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, Norman Baker was born in 1882 in Muscatine, Iowa, which is the homelands of the Kickapoo, Sauk, Meskwaki, and the Ochefi, Sakowin, Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, Sioux nations.
Hmm.
Today, there are four main tribes that live in the colonial state. There's the Umoho, which is the Omaha tribe of Nebraska and Iowa, the Ponca, which is the Ponca tribe of Nebraska, the Meskwaki, which is the Sac and Fox of the Mississippi in Iowa, and the Ho-Chunk, which is a Winnebago tribe of Nebraska. So that is a little bit history of where Norman Baker is from. It's just important to acknowledge whose land it actually is.
Yes.
By 1914, he had moved away, joined a vaudeville act, married a fortune teller, and then moved back to Muscatine to found the Tangley Company.
Whoa.
This company had many operations such as manufacturing calliopes. Do you know that, what that is?
No.
It's a musical instrument that uses steam or gas.
Oh.
It's essentially like an organ.
Yes.
But it's like, it sounds like a carnival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know.
So they manufactured those. They had mail order catalogs and pamphlets, which boasted instructions of mentalism. So one of the more well-known pamphlets is called Madame Pearl Tangley's Complete Instructions in Mentalism. Now, mentalism essentially is like about dreams and psychology and astrology all kind of combined. It's essentially like a cult.
Okay.
Occulty.
Well, I thought that sounded pretty cool.
It is cool, except
not in the way that they do it.
No. Additionally, he created a radio station which was used for free advertising for his all of his products and kind of like these like theater productions. Essentially, Norman had an extremely charismatic and flamboyant personality, and he would go on and on about philosophy and science and presidents and health matters and farming, all while being uneducated in any of it.
Okay. Did anybody even listen to this?
Yes.
Oh, a lot of people?
Yep. Oh, he's also an anti-vax.
Well, that's not surprising at all.
No.
Of course he is.
And he had like that kind of following.
Right.
You know? Long story short, he was a con man from a young age who had the riz to convince people of his mentalist healing powers.
Not the riz. Don't yeah, you know.
He had the riz.
No, he doesn't have any riz.
Well, he did. He had a lot of riz.
Sorry.
Oh, by 1930, Baker established his own hospital in Muscatine with claims that he could cure cancer and illnesses, despite having no background or education, as mentioned previously. His publications all ran advertisements for treatments, including graphic images of his patients before and after, which were enough to convince the public of his curing abilities.
Oh no.
Additionally, he would belittle well-known established medical practices to further boost his credibility. That's kind of where like the anti-vaxness comes in. Now, I wanted to take a moment for a disclaimer here. Obviously, we're in the mid-1900s with this story, and the medicine we're discussing is fully European Western medicine practices taking place in colonial America. There have been medicine practices around the world for thousands and thousands of years by thousands of different cultures, some of which would never pass the Western medicine test. Does this mean they're wrong or don't work? No. does this mean anything that isn't Western medicine isn't real medicine? No, not at all. This story is not really about what does or doesn't work in medicine practices. Rather, it's about this con man who didn't even use any type of genuine medicine and claimed he could cure cancer of all things.
Mm-hmm.
Also, take a shot every time that I said medicine. But also, it's
shot,
too many
shot,
times.
Shot, 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 shot. Everybody!
So bad. So the residents of Muscaton quickly caught on to Baker's scheme, but his advertising continued to bring in people from out of town. In April of 1930, the Muscaton Count... I'm so bad today. The Muscaton County Medical Society sent a letter to Baker that claimed, quote, "This radio broadcasting covers a wide area, and his preachment against health measures and all rational treatment of disease is poisoning the mind of the public and is certainly a menace to progressive health measures." They wanted him to stop spouting his crazy information.
Yeah.
And they warned him that it would lead to lawsuits. Mm. Later that same year, the state of Iowa sued Baker for practicing without a license.
Oh.
Additionally, the Federal Radio Commission wanted to revoke his broadcast license as well. After back and forth and many suits later, classic America, Baker re-entered his medical, quote-unquote, practice in 1935, creating a new Baker Hospital in Muscaton, as well as one at the former Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs in 1937. So this is when we get back to Eureka Springs.
Oh, no.
So Baker's at his new hospital in Eureka Springs, aptly named Baker Hospital.
Wow. He's like, I'm a doctor.
On his radio station, Baker also called his hospital the Castle in the Air, which made it even more alluring to people who were seeking solace and wanting help with their illnesses. And he continued to boast that he could heal cancer without resorting to any surgical procedures at all.
Oh boy.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Baker started making extensive modifications to the hotel. He changed the interior to be all lavender themed, and even some of the chimneys today are still purple.
Whoa.
Which is also maybe where people got the inspiration to create this movie called The Man in Purple from 2018.
Oh.
And it's about Norman Baker.
Okay.
Though I will tell you, it looks terrible.
Oh,
like I can see the main character's wig line.
Stop it.
That's how bad it is.
Oh, it's no.
So bad.
Really?
It's really bad. Yeah.
Oh.
In the hotel, he also created an escape route from his office suite on the first floor, concealing a hidden staircase that he could run away on when the state would inevitably come to arrest him. So he was paranoid as hell.
So he was like, oh, I'm just going to keep practicing and they're going to come for me one day.
Yes.
Okay.
He knew it. But he was like, cool. Whatever. And most townsfolks, they welcomed Baker with open arms as they wanted their town back on the map. And they saw this as an opportunity for money to come into Eureka Springs. Because obviously this was during the Depression era. Like, there's no money. So they're kind of like, yeah, he seems maybe a little sketchy, but we'll just close our eyes to it for now.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, whatever, it's fine. Once the hospital was open, Baker moved his 140 patients and staff from the Muscatine Hospital to the new Baker Hospital so they could, quote, all live together as one big family.
Oh, yay.
Yay. He then began a $1 million ad campaign, blasting his curable advertisements everywhere he could. His pamphlets from before, the local newspaper, his multiple radio stations, etc. And cancer patients started flocking to the new healing center.
Oh no.
These ads boasted about the fresh air, the crystal healing waters of Eureka Springs, and promises of healing desperate sick people with his cure that would make them healthy and take the cancer away.
Right.
There was also this kind of like, what's it called? What's it called when you, there was also this campaign where he got these, like, five cancer patients to use his Formula 5 injection.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they could be like, yeah, it's totally working. Look, world. And they were like part of like his advertising campaign.
Oh.
All of them eventually also died.
Died.
Yeah, but they were like, they got, people saw them doing it. They were essentially influencers. Right. And also you can kind of think about Norman Baker as like one of the first influencers. Like he's literally just selling something that isn't even real or yeah. good or true.
Yeah.
Not that all influencers do that, but most of them do.
Oh, that's the tea.
And that's the tea. Patients were promised that if their cancer wasn't cured in three to 6 weeks, they could return for more treatment free of charge, except for room, board, and transportation. They would sign away their entire life savings to Baker in hopes of being cured, and they trusted him with their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the disease that they had, all the treatments were the same. He would choose one of his two injection options and have his staff inject the patients 4 times a day, every day.
Oh my God.
Except Sunday, because Jesus.
Oh.
The staff would joke that they were like machine guns because they were giving so many injections so quickly.
Oh my God.
Because if you think about how many, like he came with 140 patients.
And then
more people were probably there. That's like 600 plus injections.
Yeah.
Every day. That's crazy. That's crazy that they would have to make so much.
What's in these injections?
Right. So it was later revealed that both of these injections contained carbolic acid or phenol, which is a super powerful poison that can cause organ failure. So a lot of people actually kind of think of Norman Baker as a serial killer, not just like a quack doctor.
Yeah. Like, did he know?
He made it.
So he knew it was poison.
Yeah, for sure.
My God.
I'm sure. So interestingly, this is the same poison that was used by the Nazis on victims in concentration camps.
Oh my God.
And some have speculated that Baker was pro-Hitler. And since this was around the same time that the Nazis were murdering people, there could be a connection between the two. Like maybe Baker got information about what they were using to kill people.
Right.
This formula is called Formula 5.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's that on that.
Right.
However, it wasn't long that the staff and the locals would start noticing weird and suspicious things happening at the hotel. An entire wing was sealed off, soundproofed, and locked from the outside.
Oh my God.
This was labeled the psychiatric wing, and patients who either weren't getting better, were complaining that the treatments weren't working, or were just screaming in pain from their cancer, would be locked up in this wing and they would never return.
Oh.
So they would die there.
They're just left there to...
Like, they were still taken care of, quote unquote, but they were separated from the rest of the patients.
Oh.
Additionally, there were patients who were declared as cured, even if they were in worse shape than when they arrived.
Oh.
So he'd be like, oh, you're cured. And they would be on death's doorstep.
Right.
And it was later revealed that these patients would return home after being released from the hospital, and they would essentially die, like, instantly. Like, within days, usually. Sometimes they would die on the train ride back home.
Oh my God.
This is when rumors began to circle the town that Baker was conducting medical experiments on patients in the basement morgue and were then sent down underground tunnels to the local crematorium.
Right.
Now, the second part is definitely a rumor. There are no tunnels that connect the town as far as anyone has found yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the first part, however, is contested. It may be true that he would experiment on deceased patients even though he had no clue what he was doing. The proof of this is that in 2019, these gardeners were working in the backyard, and all of a sudden they heard breaking glass, and they were like, what is that? And so then they stop their work and they look and they see, they find all these glass jars. So they start digging and they start digging and they keep unearthing all of these glass jars. This is like on the property, yeah, kind of by the forest.
Yeah.
And there were hundreds and hundreds of bottles and jars. Some were filled with alcohol and others were filled with like unknown tissue, like body, yeah, tissue.
Yeah.
These were thought to be the sample bottles that Baker would showcase to his patients, claiming that they were cancer specimens. And while the tests are ongoing, none have ever tested positive for being cancerous. However, these are still thought to be human tissue that were removed from patients after death and placed into the jars by Baker or other nurses working at the hospital. So he was just kind of like cutting people up because he wanted to, and then putting pieces, yeah, of tissue in jars.
Ew.
As like samples.
Ew.
I don't know if he was like also a little kooky.
Are these nurses real nurses?
I don't think so.
Oh, they're just people?
Maybe, but maybe not. Apparently, like, some resources say that the nurses didn't know, and some say that they did know.
Oh, boy. What a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
According to some of those nurses and others that worked at the hospital, Baker and nurses would wait until 11 p.m. to remove the bodies of those who died during the day.
Ew.
Now, this was because patients were required to be in bed and sleeping at 11, so no one would be in the common areas when they had to remove the bodies and bring them down to the morgue.
Oh.
To keep it a secret that anyone could die at the healing retreat.
Oh, no.
Because they were like, no, no one dies here. Pfft, no, not at all.
What did they do with the bodies?
I don't know.
Are they just buried there?
I don't.
Are
they all cut up? No, I didn't find anything about that. I think they might have been cremated. Like, they might have been taken somewhere.
Oh.
I have no clue.
Oh, no.
But in the first 20 months of the hospital opening, over 44 people died.
Whoa.
So that's like 2 people a month.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. For the next 2.5 years, this continued. Baker raked in millions and millions of dollars from sick people who just wanted to live and be cured of their disease. However, in 1940, some places I read 1939, Baker was arrested on mail fraud charges.
What?
Yeah. So postal inspectors alleged that Baker defrauded his victims out of nearly $4 million through, whoa, his newsletters and also mailing out his like magic elixir.
Yeah.
Whatever, 5 shit around, yeah, the country. Do you want to guess how much that's worth today?
4 million? What year is it?
1939.
28.
No.
More?
Yes.
80?
Close.
100?
$91 million.
$91 million?
Yeah. And when I was reading,
what?
When I was doing the research on the website, the article, mm-hmm, the article that I was reading for this section was written in 2021.
Uh-huh.
And they said 78 million. So in 4, what, fucking years, it went from $78 million
to 91.
To 91. Maybe the calculator was a different calculator and maybe it's not super accurate. But I'm like, no, holy fuck.
That's pretty. That makes sense.
Yeah. So after a 3-week trial, he and 2 other doctors from his hospital, uh-huh, were convicted and sentenced to, drumroll please, 3 years in Leavenworth Prison and a $4,000 fine.
Oh, I know. $4,000.
Because remember, he wasn't being charged for killing anyone.
No.
He was pretty good at covering his tracks, and right, he was only being charged for mail fraud.
That's still crazy.
He didn't have to give back any of his money.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Wow, okay.
After serving his time, Baker tried to open another research center in Muscatine, but they were like, fuck you, no.
Yeah, bye.
He eventually retired, and finally, in 1958, Baker died, and would you like to guess how he died?
Cancer!
Yep, he died of liver cancer.
Oh my god.
Because that is very sweet, sweet justice.
Yeah, no kidding.
So now we're going to talk about the Crescent Hotel ghosts. The next few decades of the hotel saw various owners, and in 1970, this is when visitors really started to claim spiritual and unexplained phenomena, such as mysterious vapors, ghostly figures, sounds coming from empty rooms, and objects being moved even though no one was around.
Ooh, no, I don't like the object thing.
I know, poltergeist shit.
Yeah.
The current owners purchased the Crescent Hotel in the late 90s, I think. Whoa. 1997, and they put in a ton of money and work to get it back to its original state and more.
Oh, that's
they even
nice.
Ended up like rebuilding some areas that were burnt down by this fire that happened. There's a lot of history. I was like, I can't, this is gonna be way too long if I add it all. So I was like, no. The owners rely heavily on its reputation as being haunted, and they call it the most haunted hotel in America.
Everything is the most haunted thing in America.
I know.
In the world.
In America. Ugh. The Dr. Baker era is believed to have created many of the spirits that are said to wander the halls. But I also think that probably there's a lot of like indigenous spirits wandering the land. Since the women at the women's college were like, it's fucking spooky here.
Yeah.
And also people die in hotels all the time.
Yeah.
The most recent death at this hotel was actually in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Where this man was drinking at the bar, mm-hmm. and then he went like upstairs and he accidentally tripped over this railing and he fell 4 stories inside the hotel. And he died.
Oh my god.
I think it was like in the spiral staircase of the hotel.
Oh my.
Yeah, super sad.
Oh.
Because you know those fucking railings are tiny. They're like so short. Like not up to code at all.
I'm always scared when...
when there's a railing.
Yeah.
Sarah's scared of railings. She sees one and she's like...
No, I'm actually so scared of... I'm like, falling. What if I just...
Oh yeah. Yeah, I get that too.
What if I just lean against this railing and somehow I topple over it?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
That's why I don't like heights anymore. I'm scared. Just a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
I'm scared of everything.
I get it. Baker's spirit has been seen in the hotel lobby as well as in his office area. Mm-hmm. He's described as a man in a purple shirt and a white linen suit. So I was watching Haunted Nights on YouTube. Have you watched those guys?
No.
They're really good. I really, really like to watch them. They're not that, like, they don't have a lot of followers right now, but they're really calm and they don't make it scary even if they're scared.
Oh.
Like, they don't make it like, you know, Twin Paranormal, I love them so much, but like, they make it scary and they like yell a lot and they get like really scared and they're like, everything is evil. But then these guys, they just want to like connect with the spirits.
Yeah.
And they're super, they're really sweet.
What is it? Haunted Nights?
Yeah.
Like K'night or night?
Nights. And the T is an upside down cross, I think, usually.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, they're lovely. Cool. Anyway, they've been to the Crescent Hotel twice now. And each time that they connect with Baker, it seems like he's trying to send them away or keep them away from his office area, which is where he would have kept all the files mm-hmm. for the patients. At times, he seems to get really angry or upset with them, but otherwise he seems honestly pretty harmless. He's just kind of like, get out of my office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What happened to those files?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. It was kind of hard to research this case, like
figure out what happened,
because even on the Wikipedia there's like nothing, which I love wiki, so then I had to go onto other people's like blogs and pages and then like the archives and even on the hotel website there's like a little bit but there's not that much, and I'm like, where are people getting this information? And I'm kind of wondering how much of it is just like a game of telephone at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Huh. But the jars are so recent that it's like, yes, and that's like actual evidence.
Right.
But...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that's so weird because it's like, okay, he went to jail for mail fraud and then he got out and then he died.
Yeah.
And then...
That's it.
And then this couple bought the...
And then it went through different owners, and then the couple bought the hotel. Because the hotel was kind of going into ruins.
Right.
They were like, no, we love this place.
Let's save it. So I wonder if there was, like, if the records were in there when the first people bought it.
Yeah.
And then converted it back into a hotel.
Since he was, like, taken in, arrested, that's what I meant to say, they probably took all the records.
Right.
And then they probably figured it out.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
And then they were like, sorry, patients, go home. Like, what? That's fucked.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, this has all been a scam. Like, you can go home now.
Like, were they told, like, sorry, these injections are literal poison. Like, you're just being poisoned.
I don't know.
Bye. Go to the hospital?
I know. But then they were already in a... They thought they were in a hospital.
Right. Oh, the mistrust of the medical system would have been so much higher than, like, regular people.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so kind of, like, so sad.
Yeah.
So sad and so fucked up and crazy.
Damn.
But, yeah. All right, okay. Ghosts. Guests will see the spirit of a nurse pushing a gurney in the old morgue area. And she's kind of known to just, like, squeak and rattle down the halls of the hotel. A hotel maintenance man witnessed all of the washer and dryers mysteriously turn on in the middle of the night.
Whoa.
Now, the laundry room is located next to that old morgue, which also still contains the autopsy table and walk-in freezer where they kept the bodies. And the hotel managers also took, like, a bunch of those jars, and they have them up in the morgue.
Ew!
On display.
What?
And then another cool thing is that they, instead of keeping on digging all the jars, they just kind of left it, and they, like, put this, like, wooden frame around it with a glass front, so you can, like, see where the dig site is and, like, look in, but it's protected from the elements.
Whoa. Yeah,
I know. So crazy. Maybe we'll put a photo of that on
Instagram,
if we can get a photo of it. I know. A cook at the hotel named Steve Garrison had two strange encounters in the kitchen of the Crystal Dining Room. One morning, when prepping veggies, he looked up and he saw a little boy with pop bottle glasses, quote unquote, so probably just really thick glasses.
Yeah.
Dressed in old-fashioned clothing and knickers, slipping around the kitchen.
Oh.
Slipping, spinning, maybe. Maybe I misspelled something. He's just around the kitchen. Another morning, Garrison flipped on the lights to begin the day's preparations when, quote, some or all of the pots and pans came flying off their hooks.
Whoa.
And he was like, okie dokie.
Damn.
In room 202, a waiter is seen going in and out of this room at all hours, bringing in trays of things, probably food. As well, a lady will appear at the foot of the bed in a Victorian outfit, and she is known to just watch people sleep.
Oh.
In room 419 is where Theodora is usually seen. So Theodora was the head nurse at the hospital, who sadly ended up getting cancer and becoming a patient of the hospital.
Oh my God.
And then eventually passed away.
Damn.
Her spirit is often seen fumbling with her keys while trying to get into room 419. People will often go up to her and offer their help when they see her, and she just replies, I'm looking for my keys, and she vanishes.
Oh.
Visitors who stay in this room will find their items organized and folded nicely while they're taking a shower or going out for a day when they return. So she's actually, like, a super sweet spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, how crazy to be like, I'm a nurse here, and then you're like, nope, I'm a patient here.
Yeah.
Like, so crazy.
Oh.
Then there's the spirit of Michael. At 17 years old, Michael was working on the building as it was being built in the 1880s. And as he's working, he sees this beautiful woman passing by.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I need to get her attention. And so he's like, kind of like dancing a bit, trying to like wave her down, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then he slips and falls.
Yeah.
And he drops onto like a beam of the hotel and he dies. And so this beam is now part of room 218. People who stay in room 218, especially men, they often have an experience. Michael doesn't seem to like the men who stay there. They often feel like they're being kicked in their backs when they're sleeping. And it's thought to be Michael trying to kick them out of the bed.
Oh my God.
Additionally, Michael has been known to open locks on doors of room 218 and surrounding rooms as well.
Okay, Michael.
I know.
Calm down.
So here's a couple Reddit stories I took to Reddit, as I am wont to do. This one's from Aeroshot3000. And they say, I stayed in one of the Whirlpool suites with my girlfriend a few months ago. We left the water in the tub because it drained loudly and those walls are paper thin. We had a wedding party staying in the room next to us.
Mm.
At around 4 a.m., I got woken up by the sounds of splashing water in the tub.
Oh my God.
Said nope and went back to sleep. Apparently, my girlfriend heard the splashing several times throughout the night. I woke up to find she turned on all of the lights because she was so freaked out, lol.
Oh my God!
I know.
Just drain the tub!
I know, like, what it's okay. Hell? Yeah, it was funny because as you were coming over, I was re-watching the Sam and Colby, Chris and Selena video of them at the Crescent Hotel because they've gone there as well. Yeah. That's the one where I was like, you've seen it for sure. Right. And Sam and Colby are, like, talking about it.
Yeah.
To the camera, like, in their room doing their, like,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then you can, like, hear people, like, trying to open the door.
Yeah.
But it turns out they're not trying to get into their room. It just sounds like it because it's, the walls are so thin.
Yeah.
Like, I could not imagine staying in a hotel like that. Like, what?
Yeah.
Weird.
Damn, okay.
All right, this one's from CRX Threads with a Z. My niece and I stayed there in July for her birthday. 3:05, I believe. She wanted to explore at 2:30 a.m. We were the only ones about. We walked around quietly and then sat on the back steps with Jasper the cat for a while. He followed us around the garden. It was about 3:30 when we went back up. We never saw or felt anything strange while out, but immediately after, I turned away from quietly sliding on the chain lock, and the lock was then flung off with a good force.
Whoa.
We both heard it and turned together to see it swinging. It was a very memorable experience.
Damn.
Then my last one I have from Reddit is from Garbo17. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have the full story because it was super long, but they claimed that they were chased by an angry ghost down the hallway. So first they saw the angry ghost at the end of the hall.
Yeah.
They were like, eep, but they didn't think it was a ghost. They thought it was a staff person.
Right.
So they're like, maybe we should just get out of here. And then they start walking and then they see the same ghost again.
Oh.
So then they're like, uh-oh. So then they start running and they run down the spiral stairs all the way down to the first floor. They see the ghost again.
Oh my God.
And this time they're like, fuck. So they end up running out of the hotel until they feel safe. And they think that this was the ghost of Theodora, but Theodora isn't often angry, so I don't actually know who it was.
Oh.
And then I also saw a couple of pictures on Reddit. There was one where you could, like, see a person peeking around a corner.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. And it looked like how people described Theodora, with, like, brown hair and, like, a certain kind of outfit. And I was like, damn, was this in the same area? Maybe. I don't know. And that is all of the ghosts of the Crescent Hotel. And that is the end of my story of Norman Baker, the Baker Hospital, the Crescent Hotel, and its legacy. You can go there still today. It operates as a hotel. They have ghost tours, of course. They also have kids ghost tours, and the kids have to be accompanied by someone 18 plus. So
yeah.
And the parent goes for free.
Oh,
so
that's fun.
Yeah. Anyway, and that's that.
Thank you. That's You're pretty welcome. Crazy.
Yeah, sorry that was a bit of a longer one, but I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I had to tell you.
Hospitals.
I had to tell you. It's okay. Just be scared of fake hospitals.
Yeah, what the hell?
That's all. Well, thank you for listening, and we hope you keep coming back, and we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you keep listening.
If you have any questions, comments, concerns, considerations, or critiques, you can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram or slide into our DMs at
ghoulsocietypod.
And
leave us a review.
Leave us a review, a rating, and give us a comment if you have time.
And tell your friends and your family and your family friends and
Your family's family.
And your coworkers.
And your coworkers' family. That's right. Okay.
And bye.
Now I'm a baby. Okay, are you ready?
Are we recording?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We're recording now. Okay, 3, 2, 1. And we'll never tell anyone under 18 about this podcast.
No.
So it already has the explicit content warning.
Oh, well, I will say that our cousin's kids listen to it with
Wait, really?
Hi!
Hi, girls!
Oh my god,
wow, we love you, we miss you!
Yeah, the girls are listening.
Okay, well, they get a pass because they're our family.